You're listening to BBC Radio 3. It's midday and time for Composer of the Week. Donald MacLeod begins an exploration of the life and music of Antonio Vivaldi.
Horrors of the sword, carnage, vengeance, rage, fear and want, all invoked in the bellicose opening chorus of Assyrians of the oratorio Judita Triumphans, Judith Triumphant, composed especially for the extraordinarily talented girls of the famous Ospedale della Pietà in Venice. It was written by the then 38-year-old composer and priest Antonio Vivaldi, often known as Il Prete Rosso, the Red Priest, on account of his red hair. Vivaldi's name is now inextricably associated with the charitable institution of the Pietà, where the female residents benefited from his skills as composer, violinist, teacher, and impresario. The girls who were taken in there were given the opportunity to acquire useful skills. Those who showed evidence of musical ability were picked out and trained either as singers or instrumentalists, or both. They were known as the figlie di coro, choir girls. Vivaldi's duties at the Pietà included writing music for the girls to play at weekly concerts, and the surprisingly wide variety of instruments they played gave him the chance to experiment with all sorts of combinations in his concertos. The first publication of Vivaldi's music, which made a name for him beyond Italy, appeared in 1711 as his Opus 3 under the title L'Estro Armonico, when Vivaldi was in his early 30s. This collection, recognised by scholars as the most influential music publication of the first half of the 18th century, was something out of the ordinary, and it was indeed recognised as such by Vivaldi's contemporaries, including J.S. Bach in far-off Saxony, who made transcriptions of several pieces from this Opus 3 set. The music was published in Amsterdam by Étienne Roger. He was obviously a very shrewd character who recognised the quality of this music from an unknown young composer. Roger was something of a piratical cove, but he ran a very high-class operation with superb engraving and printing techniques. Vivaldi's collection was a very expensive work to produce, but Roger had an enviable list of contacts, and that ensured a very effective distribution network which established Vivaldi's name across Europe. We'll hear the 11th concerto from that Opus 3 set, scored for two violins, cello and strings. The impassioned opening of this concerto is unlike anything which had been heard before. Thank you. In that performance of Vivaldi's Concerto No. 11 from the collection called L'Estro Armonico, we heard violinists Fabio Biondi and Raffaella Negri, cellist Maurizio Nadeo with the ensemble Europa Galante. Vivaldi was 33 when that music appeared in print. So he was born in 1678, on the 4th of March to be exact, when there was an earthquake and Venice trembled on its poles in the mud. The midwife was shaken enough by what she saw. To her experienced eye, the sickly infant didn't look long for this world, not long enough even for the priest to come. She poured some water over him and gave him a hasty baptism. Antonio inherited both his father Giambattista's red hair and his talent as a violinist. His father said to have given him his first lessons. Vivaldi Sr. dabbled in barbering and bakery before becoming a professional musician in the orchestra of the Basilica of St. Mark's, where he was known as Rossi from that copper-coloured hair he bequeathed to his son. Antonio evidently studied with the director of music at St. Mark's, Giovanni Legrenzi, and in his early teens he sometimes deputised for his father in the orchestra. But as the eldest boy in a poor family, Vivaldi was destined for the priesthood, and those red locks were tonsured in September 1693, when he was 15 and a half. Year by year, he moved up the hierarchy through the ranks of lector and acolyte to be ordained in 1703. Combining the careers of musician and priest wasn't unusual at the time, and it was that same year that Vivaldi was appointed as violin teacher at the Ospedale della Pietà. Early in his career, Vivaldi seems to have focused on small-scale pieces, trio and solo sonatas, mostly written for private patrons, though it seems quite possible the girls at the Pietà may have benefited too. His earliest solo sonatas for violin and harpsichord are collected in his Opus 2, which was published in Venice in 1709. This shows what a canny operator Vivaldi was, since he opportunistically dedicated the set to King Frederick IV of Denmark and Norway, who happened to be visiting Venice at the time, though incognito, passing himself off as the Duke of Oldenburg. He went to one of the Pietà concerts which Vivaldi conducted. Well, this sonata, the last of the regally dedicated set, begins with a spacious prelude. kind of thing a young composer was expected to cut his teeth on before the concerto had firmly established itself as a form. Elizabeth Walfisch was the violinist and Malcolm Proud the harpsichordist in the sixth sonata from Vivaldi's Opus 2 collection. Vivaldi's job as violin teacher at the Ospedale della Pietà, which he took up in 1703, was one that he would hold on and off, very much on and off, for most of his life. The Pietà, like the other three ospedali in Venice, had been set up as hospices to provide care for different sections of the population. The oldest, San Lazzaro dei Mendicanti, took in beggars, lepers and the disabled. The Pietà took care of the large numbers of abandoned, orphaned or indigent children who were then a fact of life as a result of poverty, death or the incapacity of a single surviving parent. The Pietà accepted only girls, who were often deposited anonymously at the entrance in the scaffetta, a device like a little revolving door, the mother usually leaving a token with the infant by which it might later be identified and reclaimed if her circumstances changed. To begin with, Vivaldi's role was limited to instructing the girls in his own instrumental speciality, playing the violin, but it gradually expanded to teaching a number of other instruments too. Later, when the director of music was away for a time, he took on the task of writing music specially tailored to display the dazzling array of talents offered by the girls. Their musical education soon became the raison d'etre of the entire institution, and standards rose to the point where tickets were sold for their performances. The talented players clearly didn't relish the idea of retiring into the anonymity of marriage or the nunnery, and some of them chose to stay on to become the stars of the Pietà's concerts. In time, they were being ranked alongside the leading virtuosi of their age by the connoisseurs who came to hear them in Venice. As one traveller remarked, "They sing like angels and play the violin, the flute, the organ, the oboe, the cello and the bassoon. In short, there is no instrument, however unwieldy, that can frighten them." This ensemble concerto probably dates from later in Vivaldi's career, but it demonstrates the wide range of solo instruments he felt he could call into play, painting with a whole spectrum of colours. In this case, pairs of recorders, oboes and violin, with a bassoon and strings. One of a small group of something like 30 concertos by Vivaldi, which he classed as con molti strumenti. That one in D minor for two recorders, two oboes, bassoon, two violins and strings. Ruom number 566. It was played by the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment. Vivaldi's relationship with the governors of the Pietà went through distinct peaks and troughs. He could be quite an exasperating employee. Nonetheless, early on in his tenure, they found themselves in a bit of a fix. For the first decade or so of his time at the Pietà, Vivaldi was working as second-in-command to the composer Francesco Gasparini, who was director of music there. It was his role to write the sacred music for the Church of the Pietà. When Gasparini went off on an extended leave of absence, various unsatisfactory temporary directors were brought in, and when, in early 1714, the latest one was let go, Vivaldi obligingly stepped in to fulfil the governor's stipulated quota of two new Mass and Vespers setting a year, at least two motets every month, and occasional compositions as required for funerals, the offices of Holy Week, etc. On this occasion, Vivaldi didn't foul up or swan off elsewhere to work, and the Board of Governors was well satisfied with his execution of his duties. They voted him a bonus of 50 ducats in token of its gratitude and in appreciation of his efforts and special contributions. We'll hear a setting of the Magnificat by him in a moment. We know of several incarnations of it by Vivaldi, two of them with the girls of the Pietà in mind. This one, which seems to be the earliest, is admirably concise, with the most moving section where he sets the words Et misericordia, and his mercy is on them that fear him, with its anguished intervals. We're going to hear the Magnificat prefaced by an intriguing little concerto with a subtitle Madrigalesco. Less a madrigal, more a parody of music by Vivaldi himself, as he borrows from his own liturgical music, including the final fugue of the Magnificat. It's performed by the ensemble Florilegium.
Thank you.
the beautifully textured double fugue which ends that setting of the Magnificat by Vivaldi, Ruom number 610A, to give it its official tag. We had the voices of Susan Gritton, Lisa Milne, Catherine Denley and Linton Atkinson, with the King's Consort, Choristers and Choir, conducted by Robert King. And before that, the Concerto Madrigalesco was played by Florilegium. I hope you can join me tomorrow as we see Vivaldi making a big impression with his first ventures into opera and enjoying the kudos of a significant appointment at the court of Mantua.
And that'll be here on BBC Radio 3 at the same time tomorrow, midday. Composer of the Week is presented by Donald MacLeod.